Welcome today to our interview series with Outstanding Professional. We are conducting an exclusive interview with Daniel Nirenberg, a leading authority in Microsoft technologies, a Microsoft certified trainer and consultant advisor to corporations, and a Microsoft Most Valuable Professional Award recipient. Daniel, considering your very busy schedule, we thank you for doing this interview with us today.
Well, thank you, Stephen. It's absolutely my pleasure to be here with you today, and I look forward to definitely talking about the topic of the day.
Daniel, can you share one or more stories centered around these themes and which involve the Windows client operating system, such as something that's amusing, surprising, inspirational, disruptive, or historical?
So historically speaking, I started using Windows back in the Windows 3.0 days, and it was a pretty amazing experience, I'd say, for me, because what happened was we went from using the command prompt, which was somewhat archaic, and we really kind of launched into this science fiction-style ability to interact with our computers. So what we had been kind of promised for years in the books and television shows with these fancy graphics and interfaces was finally coming to life, and I thought that was pretty amazing. As Windows progressed to 3.1 and then we got Windows 95, I have some really fond memories, and I, you know, somewhat inspirational for me. My grandfather, who was the person who introduced me to computing with his Commodore 64, decided when Windows 95 came out, it was time to make the jump to a PC. And when I was smaller, I you know, used the paint programs on Commodore, and he kind of showed me the how it worked and how to load things. And by the time he switched over to using Windows 95, I had gained a vast amount of knowledge about using the PC and using Windows, and it became a lot of fun when we'd exchange information on how to do things. So he would learn how to configure email in one way, and I'd learn how to, and I, you know, he'd show me how to do that. I would then show him how to do how to find files or how to modify settings in the registry or on the computer in order to get, you know, his desktop wallpaper configured just how he liked it. And so I have a lot of fond memories of using Windows 95 and exchanging emails with my grandfather in those early days of Windows. Then one of my favorite anecdotes that I've always liked to tell people about and really opened my eyes to the fact that Windows wasn't just something that we used here in North America, was this first time that I was handed a copy of Windows 95 in Chinese. And I had to set up two computers in order to install the Chinese version of Windows because, of course, when you install it for the first time, you have all the Chinese script text or characters, and I had no idea what I was doing. So I have to keep an English version on one side and kind of, you know, click next and click whatever the Chinese character for next was at the same time. So it was a lot of fun to see how Windows was becoming this global, globally used operating system, globally used platform that applications that people building applications could develop for.
You know, Daniel, you're just an amazing expert in the whole Windows area. So what would be your sort of tips, like hard-to-find tips, that you would want to give to IT pros whose jobs are involved with supporting the major Windows client operating systems?
Well, I deal with IT pros who have to solve a variety of problems on Windows, and that could, you know, be anywhere from client to server. And one of the kind of interesting aspects of Microsoft's, you know, vast website they have is that there are just tons of free tools and applications that are available right off of their website that I leverage myself every day. And, you know, this goes from tools to do text file comparisons or tools to fix registry issues. And it goes to tools for deploying Windows. And then finally, tools to kind of help you plan on integrating newer versions of Windows or features of Windows into your environment. And what always surprises me is, you know, IT pros are often looking for an answer. How do I do this? What tools can I get to do that? And a lot of the time, there's an incredible vast array of tools. So some of the stuff that that many IT pros have heard of or have used, but don't realize sometimes are so easily and quickly available on the website, are the sysinternals tools. So those are the tools that used to be provided by the company Winternals, which Microsoft acquired, and that's Mark Krasunovich's company, and is an excellent, excellent set of tools for helping to troubleshoot various Windows problems, and that's available right off the Microsoft website now. One of the two sets of tools that I use almost exclusively for all sorts of troubleshooting are the Microsoft support tools, which you can get right off the Windows DVD, but you can also get them off the Windows website or the Microsoft website. And then the resource kit tools, which are another collection of many, many tools, such as one of my favorite is RoboCopy. It's a great tool for synchronizing two directories together. And many people have this issue, and they come to me and say, I have to synchronize, you know, these directories. And I had started by dragging and dropping a folder, which halfway through, for whatever reason, had an error. And now I have, I don't know what's in one folder, I don't know what's in the other folder. And there's this wonderful tool that Microsoft has built and has dropped and is put in the resource kit. And every time I show it to an IT pro, their eyes light up, and they're just absolutely excited to see that there's something that's there. It's without charge, you don't have to pay for it, and it does the job that they need, which is to get these two folders synchronized. And recently, Microsoft has done a really great job on the solution accelerators. And I'll have to be honest with you, Stephen, most of the tools that I use today, and when I go out to my customers, are these tools, and there's a couple of reasons for that. First of all, most of these tools are available without any cost to the customer. Often what they require is to have purchased Windows, and that's already been done, so they're ready to go, and they're ready to use these tools. And the other thing is that it's easy for me to get things done with these tools for my customers, and then show them how and give them those tools to use in perpetuity. So I think that for IT pros, it's funny, the first thing that I always recommend is, well, if you've had the problem, someone else has probably had the problem. There's a good chance Microsoft has either documented that or at least made a tool, or possibly even made a tool to help you fix that. And it's amazing what you can find just by searching the Microsoft website.
So let's kind of now focus in on Windows Vista. What do you think is really cool about this operating system?
Well, the compelling feature I have that I've been just loving in Vista, and that I don't think I could live without at this point, is actually the search. In Windows, in previous version of Windows, the search feature was acceptable. I would say it did the job. You'd every once in a while be looking for a document, and you'd go to the Find, and you'd click Find, and you'd search for the tool, and it'd sit there and churn away. And if you managed to get the right file name or file extension, the tool would come up, or the document you were looking for would come up. So Microsoft with Vista has definitely gone a long way into making search just a much better tool. With Windows Vista Search, there's a lot of what I really like is first of all, I just hit the Start button, and I start typing what I'm looking for, whether it's a program, a document, a website that I visited that's in my history, and it just starts popping up on the task on the Start menu, and I can click into it and go. In fact, my biggest concern these days is not necessarily not being able to find things, but knowing where things are located when I actually need to go and go to the control panel, for instance, and find these particular tools so that I can document them for a customer or for a document. And so sometimes I'll spend, you know, 5-10 minutes searching around, finding where that tool is actually stored in the system or in the control panel, and I'll all kind of be kicking myself saying, why do I always search for this tool? But it's absolutely great because I can also, you know, it makes supporting Windows easier. My favorite support people I have to, or my favorite people I have to support, of course, are my parents. And with Vista, I just tell them to hit the Start button and tell them to start typing in what it is that I need them to get to, and it pops up, and they can just click it rather than having to go through a complicated scenario of click here, click here, click here, click here.
So it's not, you've indicated that you find that the search function is just an amazing part of this operating system.
Absolutely. And the other aspect that is cool about Vista, I have to say, is Aeroglass. because I like the Flip 3D or the pieces that are there now. What's really getting me excited about AirGlass is kind of what's coming down the pipe with Windows Presentation Foundation, how we're going to be able to create new applications that do really cool things. And I think that is something that a lot of people haven't really latched onto as being compelling yet, because they think, oh, it's just prettier graphics. I think once we start seeing some of the applications that are in the works, that some companies are able to produce right now for all kinds of applications, like medical applications and 3D applications, and et cetera. I think as soon as we start seeing some of these programs delivered, we're really going to be wowed by what Vista has to offer, and it'll start to become more apparent why the new AirGlass interface is as a compelling piece of the Windows equation in this today.
Daniel, you're always working with these technologies in Windows Vista, so you must have a pretty good clear picture of sort of what are the main pain points and solutions for IT pros when they're installing and then managing and then working with Windows Vista.
One of my areas of expertise is deployment and is planning and working with customers to migrate their Windows computer or their Windows XP computers or their Windows 2000 computers even towards Vista. A lot of the time, the main pain point I would say is when customers or my customers come to me and say, well, we have a large environment and we have a lot of users, and those users have a lot of data on their machines, on the network, and they have quite a few applications. And their biggest concern, the biggest, you know, block before saying, okay, let's go ahead and migrate to Vista is, how do we get those applications and the data on the computers to be preserved as we migrate it? And how can the whole thing be transparent to my users? And that's where the planning comes in. I think that the biggest challenge for IT pros is finding the time to really set up a good plan and to work on a good plan on how to get from an earlier version of Windows to Vista. And again, that's where I like to go back to some great tools that Microsoft has. There are tools that are designed for large enterprises that will help you with the planning and get you from point A to point B, and they have costs attached to them. But then there are a lot of tools before you get to that point that you can leverage as an IT pro to plan. So there's some solution accelerators that help you plan exactly how many licenses you need, what information, computer hardware will run Vista. So if you, a lot of companies I've talked to are planning on deploying Vista with a hardware refresh so they can support the new AirGlass features, for instance. And then others feel that there are some advantages, or there are some advantages that Vista has already that are compelling them to move to Vista even without using or having access to the AirGlass features and running it on lower-end hardware. As you know, Vista, or as many people might have heard, Vista does have the AirGlass, but it also can run in a non-AirGlass-enabled mode, which is about as fast as running Windows XP. But then gives you access to the search features and to the enhanced security that you see in, that Vista has. And so to address kind of what the pain point is of how do I get my environment from the older version of Windows to the newer version, there's some great tools around planning. There's also some great tools around analyzing the applications that your users are using in their environment. And all these tools are essentially for free. You can download them, you can deploy them out to a group of users, you can profile those users' applications, get an understanding what's going to work, what's not going to work. In many cases, applications that won't work will be available, there will be shims, what they call, or little patches that you can actually add to Vista to allow them to work. And finally, there's a great set of tools for moving the user's data from their old operating system to the new operating system, and there's a variety of flexibility on how to use these tools. And so I think that the real pain point in the block is kind of, you know, how do we move forward? How do we get over these hurdles? And I think a lot of IT pros have not been exposed, shall we say, to some of these tools, and I think that It's a real shame because these tools are not complicated to use, and most IT pros, once they know the tools are there, would be, I think, very excited to kind of use these tools. And even if it's just an exploratory project, it's the kind of stuff that brings a lot of valuable information forward out of your environment and allows the IT pro to, even if they aren't moving forward right away with a deployment to Vista, that allows them to get a lot of information out of their environment in regards to how their environment looks, and how they'll be, and whether and how much effort it'll take to get them ready to move to Vista.
So, what do you then consider to be the best resources for working with Vista and Windows client operating systems?
Well, there are some great tools. I think one of the main challenges, and kind of I've spoken about it a few times, is knowing what's there. And I think that most IT pros are just, they're really busy doing their job, supporting users, and working in their environments. And so I don't ever blame, or I don't ever think that an IT pro is any less of an IT pro because they don't know. It's just a simple question of they haven't had the time to really investigate it. What I like to do, because I feel the same kind of impact, and I have to be honest, I learn about new things and new resources every day that are just terrific. And sometimes I feel a little bit, you know, out of place, thinking, "Well, I should have known about this years ago. And how could I have missed this for so long?" So I think that some of the great resources that we can use to keep ourselves up to date, and we really have to pick and choose, because you know we only have so many hours in a day to dedicate to this kind of learning or expanding our horizons. So one of my favorite are the podcasts, and there's two that I like to highlight. So there's one called Run As Radio, done by a gentleman named Richard Campbell, and it's really great because what he does is he'll bring on an expert in a particular area, and you can, you know, get information before listening to the podcast. If that area impacts you, you can listen to it. If not, you can skip that week. And the information that you get out of that podcast is kind of like, what are the technical tidbits that you need? What are the resources that are available for that particular technology? And so every once in a while, there are sessions dedicated to Vista, dedicated to desktop management, dedicated to the various tools that you need to manage desktops. And I think that is probably one of the best ways to kind of get it. It's a half an hour. You can listen to it in your car. You can listen, you know, off of your Zune or your iPod or your MP3 player, and, you know, sitting in traffic, nothing can make me feel a bit better than at least using that time, staring at the back of someone else's bumper, but at least I'm learning about something and getting the information that I need to do my job. The other podcast is more targeted towards the developer side of things. It's the .NET Rocks show, again, by the same group of people, and really focused on the development technologies. So for IT pros and for developer types who are looking more to develop on the Windows platform, I think that's a terrific podcast. Then I'd say the resources that I really rely on come down to blog sites. There's a few that deal specifically with Vista at this point, and those are the Springboard sites. So there's one blog, and that's blogs.technet.com/springboard, and then there's microsoft.com/springboard. Both bring you to the kind of Microsoft in the past year has done an excellent job in reorganizing information for IT pros and with regards to Vista, and that's the Springboard site. And I'm pretty excited about that too, because I use it on a daily basis to kind of get the information I need. And it's split into several categories that allow an IT pro to kind of have a better understanding of the different phases of the of deploying and managing Vista, and then what information they need at each phase. So it's split up into discover, explore, pilot, deploy, and then manage. So pretty logical areas, and that kind of fits in with Microsoft Operations Framework documentation in terms of project management and project lifecycle management and IT lifecycle management. So it really fits in with the big picture at Microsoft. And so basically discovering is all about learning what it is that Vista is and that all the documentation that's under the Discover category is geared towards giving you the kind of 101, 100-level information on Vista. Then there's Exploring Vista, which is getting the in-depth knowledge that you need to see what the new features are, to understand what they can do, to understand how they can improve your environment and how they can create value for your company, how they can basically ease those pain points. And then there's a section on piloting and deploying, which is doing your first initial test run with getting Vista out to your clients, and then deploying, how do you scale that initial test run out to all your users. And then, of course, once Vista is deployed, there's the whole aspect of managing it, keeping everything up to date, and making sure that you can, you know, apply the policies that the company wants and leverage those features that you saw in the first couple of phases. And then there's a site I have to mention called thelazyadmin.com, a favorite site of mine, because I help run the site and contribute it, and I believe there are all kinds of little tips. And whenever one of the people that helps publish information on there find something new about Vista that we didn't know about and that seems to have gone under the radar, we always put up a post about it. And then for books, I personally haven't found a lot of books around Windows Vista that I found particularly compelling, but I definitely would recommend the Windows Vista Resource Kit for IT pros as the kind of main book that you should have available to you whenever you kind of come up against a problem and you might not have access to the web right away, or you want to just see what the kind of official party line is from Microsoft about that particular issue.
Okay, Daniel, you are this sort of amazing figure and a leader, and you're known for that. And I'm now going to ask you to look into your crystal ball. You know, what about the future of client operating systems, and how should IT pros prepare for the future? What sort of things should they be looking at?
So this is always a very interesting question, and I am definitely looking to my crystal ball here. I'm definitely, some of this is based on some of the things I've read about where business is going and where computing is going. Others is just kind of, how things are percolating through my mind as to, what all this means. I know that there are some terms that are thrown around like cloud computing, or grid computing and network computing, and it's called various things by various people. I think that there's a kind of duality here in that the idea of being able to tap into unlimited potential, or being able to tap into a vast array of computing power as we need it to solve complex problems. Some of the problems, I don't even know what they are yet, but I'm sure we'll figure them out, is compelling. And I think that the future is going to be this kind of convergence and integration of being able to still carry around our files in on ourselves. And I think that for the time being, the idea of we don't want our files to live out there in the cloud. I think that we're going to still feel a desire to be connected to them and to have something physically in our hands, like a small notebook of sorts, or have a computer at home or a little home server that allows us to store those files locally, because it gives us that kind of almost physical connection that we're sure they're there. But at the same time, I think that the idea of having them live in a data center, and, that's basically what's happening, is they're going to live on a hard drive in a data center that we trust is being run by companies like Microsoft, so that we can always get access to them. I think that will become more and more accepted. And in the medium term, we're going to see kind of these two platforms converging onto each other, so that we could basically have a file live on our laptop but be synchronized to the cloud. And then if we desire, we'll be able to move it off the cloud, move it onto the laptop, leave it on the cloud, leave it archived in there. I think as we become more and more comfortable with the idea of having files to go, or having our data going living in the cloud, it will be more accepted. But I think we'll always have a desire to be able to unplug and carry data with us in a way that doesn't necessarily need to be connected. I think the other aspect of cloud computing that's very exciting is just the ability to tap into this huge resources of processors. So I think that as we get to the point where we reach a kind of maximum potential for what our single computer can do, we'll say, well, we need to be able to sequence a genome, and the idea that we can kind of say, okay, well, I have the raw data here on my laptop, and I want to be able to process that as quickly as possible, and if I take out my credit card and I can pay a flat rate to get computing resources for an afternoon in this cloud, and I'll be able to go out and it'll process and it'll come back and bring me the results, I think that's really exciting. And where I think Windows and Microsoft's vision for cloud computing comes in is that it'll be really integrated so that we'll have applications that will run on our desktop and they'll run at 100%, and they'll pop up a message saying, hey, do you want to export some of this computing out to a cloud environment? Or for 99 cents, we can triple the speed at which this is being processed and have it done in 20 minutes instead of an afternoon. I think that's where we're going with some of this cloud computing. And it's an exciting time because there's still a lot of there's still a lot of things that aren't really panned out yet, and there's still a lot of things that we haven't been able to imagine. So it's exciting, and I think that it'll be interesting to see how these two platforms come together and merge. And my hope is that they come together gracefully rather than two trains going opposite directions on the same track.
We're going to go off a little bit to sort of another topic area, and there's this special program called the UN-founded International Federation for Information Processing, or IFIP, and they have their professional practice partnership, and which received full ratification at the World General Assembly in August of 2007, with their first implementation meeting in Montreal in October of 2007. And so this marks an historical inflection point that speaks to IT as a recognized profession with global standards, a profession-based code of ethics, and widely adopted professional certification. Again, all of this happened in 2009. Can you provide your comments on this?
Well, there's a few things that excite me about this whole process, and I think one of them is, again, how, as IT pros, we've managed to, I think, my understanding is, we've managed to be the first kind of profession in the history of the world to kind of globally say, hey, we need to have certain standards, and we need to work together as a profession to kind of raise the bar. I think as IT professionals go forward, what an IT professional does, technically speaking, will probably continue to evolve in the long run. But I think that there will be certain pillars that will always remain the same, and that's where I believe by adhering to standards and a set of ethically motivated rules is the way we can continue to evolve as a body of professionals in a responsible and progressive way. So I think that when it comes down to it, IT pros want to evolve themselves and who want to show that they are a profession unto themselves are going to embrace this new set of standards and participate in this body in the IFIP program, because it's almost a desire that is intrinsic in IT pros to kind of live up to those expectations. I think most IT pros want to be professional. They want to continue to learn. It's almost, in our DNA as IT pros, part of the job is to continuously learn and to continuously grow. And I think that with this framework, we can do it in a responsible manner that promotes the value of what IT pros can bring to the world.
So it sounds like you're very much in favor of this idea of IT as a profession and having a common identity and this feeling of being sort of an engineer or executive versus away from the purely technical aspects, and also the whole aspect of maybe business solutions and career progression and career progress and recognition and so on.
Absolutely. Again, it goes to the fact that I think that what an IT pro does at a very technical level will continue to change and evolve because the technology continues to change and evolve. But I think how we do that and the framework we use to make decisions about how data is handled, because those are the constants, right? I mean, data is data, and how it's handled and how we move it about and how we leverage that data and how we, make money with the data and how we, allow that data to be manipulated and who gets access to the data. These kind of questions are always going to be there, and with a framework like IFIPS where there is ethics about, how we comport ourselves within the industry, will be very important towards growing our profession and creating a constant relevance for our profession within the greater world context.
We're at the last part of our interview here, and we didn't talk about some of the service specs that are out there. So what are your viewpoints on the latest service spec for Vista, and then also for XP?
Well, I think that a service like Microsoft's commitment to releasing service packs to Vista and to XP are definitely, their commitment to IT professionals to say that we're still working on bringing these operating systems forward, creating additional value by introducing new features, which Microsoft does a lot less of at this point with the service packs. They're much more of a roll-up of all the patches. And I think that, I've been testing the current service pack, beta 2 or service pack 2, for the past several months. And with each service pack, little pain points and little issues definitely get fixed. So I think that for Windows and for Microsoft and for Windows Vista, service pack 2 represents another incremental improvement to the overall system. I think that IT professionals who have held out on Vista at this point really should start giving it a serious look. I think that most of the legitimate issues that people might have had when Vista was first launched have been resolved, at least for me, as someone who wasn't as I'm definitely an early adopter. I'm someone who embraces these newer technologies, and I definitely experienced a few challenges with Vista, but I haven't really been challenged by those, or I haven't really been inhibited by those now for well over a year and a half, and many of those could be easily fixed and easily worked around. And with SP2, a lot of this is just no longer there. So I think that the service packs do start to make a more compelling story for customers who have been kind of on the fence with, do I go to Vista, do I wait for Windows 7? I think that starting to look at Vista is the first step to looking at Windows 7, because Windows Vista SP2 and Windows 7 are essentially going to be very close to each other. If it works for Windows Vista with SP2, it's going to work with Windows 7. And I think that there is more and more hardware out there, as companies just do a normal hardware refresh on their computers, that can run Vista very effectively, can provide the Aeroglass experience. I think that customers will definitely want to start looking at getting Vista with SP2 out there.
We've touched on a lot of broad areas. If you were doing this interview, what three questions would you ask, and then what would be your answers?
So this is always an interesting one, because I'm trying to put myself in your shoes as an interviewer. So I guess one question I asked was, why Windows? What about Windows has always been kind of the attraction? And I guess that, my answer to that is Windows has always been a very consistent experience, and it's, evolved to really meet the needs of the people using it. And every time a new edition comes out, there are compelling features that are there. And sometimes, we don't hear about those compelling features, and You know, the search, for instance, is one of the ones that I find is just terrific for users going forward, because one of the side effects of this computer revolution we've undergone in the past 10 years is just an abundance of files. And it's been interesting, you know, with the search feature to be able to find files from that I haven't looked at for over, you know, 5 to 10 years. And so Windows has been this kind of constant, stable environment where my applications that you know, I wrote way back in college are still working today. There's just this consistency, and there's an environment that just continues to work. My other question I put down was, you know, how do you think Windows has changed the world? And I answered that a little bit, I think, back when I was mentioning that I saw Windows as a conduit to be able to communicate, have many people around the world communicate with each other, and there's a consistency there. And with the different, many different versions of Windows in many different versions of in many different languages, I think that it's a common base that we can all use to exchange ideas, and that's always been very exciting for me. And then, I guess the other question I had, which took me a little while to come up with, but I think is a great one, is what is your favorite Windows application? So for me, my favorite Windows application has to be actually Microsoft Outlook. My life just wouldn't be the same without it. In terms of organizing my day-to-day life, my calendar is indispensable. In terms of keeping track of the people that are important in my professional and my personal life, my contacts are indispensable. And of course, one of the most compelling applications of the past 20 years on computers is email, I think, and still to this day remains email. And that's where I get my email, and I manage my email, and I organize it. And I think I have in various archive files every email that I've sent or received pretty much since 1999. And it's something that I refer back to on a daily basis for all sorts of reasons. And so I think that wraps up kind of the three questions, and I hope they were of a worthy merit for you.
They're great. I think they provide a sort of great insight in terms of the kinds of work you do and where you're going in terms of the future. One sort of additional final question is, what's your favorite new technology or device?
I've always been really excited about Windows Mobility, and that is kind of one device. But lately, I think what's really excited me and what's really kind of piqued my imagination is the multi-touch devices that you can pick up now. So these are like these kind of like the Windows Surface device, which you can kind of take. You know, it's like almost like the Minority Report interface, where you can, you know, pick up things, you know, move things around with your hands and shrink things and expand things. And now you can get these devices in your local computer store or your big box computer store. And in these stores, you're able to, you can pick up these devices. They're not terribly expensive. You're looking, I think, they're about $1,000, and I'm sure they'll come down in price significantly over the next few years. And you're able to really interact with Windows and with applications in ways that, it's almost the next step of science fiction. So, you know, before we were able to interact with the graphical interface, and now we're able to really, without using the keyboard and a mouse, we're able to directly interact with the environment, move windows about, expand pictures, organize things, jot down notes with our fingers. And I think that this device, I guess what really excites me about this device is we haven't seen the application yet that's really going to make us, you know, jaw drop and sit there staring at it for forever, you know, not believing that it's possible to do this. So I'm pretty excited to see this kind of technology, the touch screen and the movable information and the manipulating the information with our hands. I'm really excited to see where this goes.
Daniel, we will continue to follow your many significant contributions, and we thank you for sharing your time, wisdom, and accumulated deep insights with our audience.
Stephen, it's been an absolute pleasure talking with you, And I thank you very much for listening to what I have to say. It's always great to talk about this really cool set of technologies which are evolving in front of us on a daily basis.
Well, this concludes our interview with Daniel Nierenberg, a leading authority in Microsoft technologies, a Microsoft certified trainer and consultant and advisor to many corporations, and a Microsoft Most Valuable Professional Award recipient.